Okay, it's close to 3 o'clock now, so are we ready?
Yeah, good. So welcome to our Saturday afternoon meditation class. And I have to make the announcements every Saturday afternoon I sit in this chair, that this is the class for the advanced elite, the close to enlightenment, A class meditators, and for those a little bit less, so you feel welcome. But that is, we also have an introduction to meditation class, which is for those who are just learning the basics of meditation for the first time. And so we have shorter meditations there, not so deep, not so complicated, but actually all meditation should be the same, nice and simple. And that class is being held in the hall, which is outside the front gate to the right. And you see there's another hall there. We call it the community hall. And in there we have the introduction to meditation classes. So usually that people have to know a little bit about meditation before they come in here. And also when you do come in here as well, please just sign those little books or do the QR code so that everybody here is free from that terrible, terrible virus. So that's the little codes or the signing the little piece of paper over there. All kept confidentially so that you are nice and safe. And already, yeah, it's nice that instead of always sitting on the floor, many times people prefer to sit on the chairs. That's why we put the chairs out for, so people can have a nice comfortable place to sit. And you do see that we have the simple plastic chairs, but out of kindness and compassion for everybody, we've also got the upholstered chairs. And for those people who are really tired and tend to nod and slip about when they're meditating, we have the meditation chairs with the armrests, which stops you going from backwards and forwards. And for those of you who tend to nod forward, we also can loan you a safety belt when you're meditating so that if you fall off, or you won't fall off, because we can't afford the insurance. So whatever, as long as you are comfortable when you're meditating, because one of the first parts of meditation is just being able to relax your body. A simple thing, but if you can't relax the body, how do people feel they can ever relax their mind? And sometimes even many of the physical diseases and illnesses and stuff which affects our body as in a stress, you may be going through a difficult time, a lot of disappointments, tragedies, or whatever, or no one's invited you to a New Year's Eve party. You know the Ajahn Brahm's New Year's Eve party, which everyone's invited to? So if you feel lonely, if you feel rejected, you can always come to my party. So I don't feel lonely on New Year's Eve. That's over in the community hall and here on New Year's Eve from 9 o'clock till just past 12. Many of you know that and been there before. But anyway, this is when you are meditating, to learning how to relax the body first of all. And by learning how to relax your body, the two important things which you need are mindfulness and kindness. These two amazing qualities which you build up on your own body first of all, before you try applying that to your mind. You apply it to your body first of all, because you're far more sensitive to your body than your mind first of all. For many people, when they start looking at their mind, a lot of time they just start thinking. And they're not really relaxing it. They don't know how to relax it. But if you relax your body first of all, when you're meditating, sitting still here, sitting on a chair, on a cushion, or wherever you happen to be sort of sitting, you do find that when the body gets really, really relaxed, you get this experience of its delight. I know that many people have aches and pains all over the place, but sometimes when you relax your body, those aches and pains, those tensions, are far less than they were when you started. And just that gives you a lot of inspiration, encouragement, that this is actually working, there's something happening here. you are learning how to make peace with your body and taking something which starts off irritating and you turn it to something which is very amazing and very peaceful. You get a very quick reward. You get the feedback. And I stress that point. I shouldn't say stress in meditation, I emphasize that point. Because when you experience that, it's starting teaching. This is actually something real, not imagination. And you then can start to relax your mind. When you are pretty relaxed in the body, it's like the body's not disturbing you anymore. It's like all that business, you know, of cooking or cleaning or doing your washing, whatever it is you're supposed to be doing in your life, all that is done. Your body is nice and peaceful. It's sitting there, really comfortable, very much at ease, and it doesn't demand your attention. It's one less problem you have to deal with, and a very big problem gone. Just the body is just sitting here, perfectly happy, all by itself. And that gives you the freedom to start focusing on your inner world, on the mind inside. And as you start focusing on the inner world of the mind, you learn how to relax that and open it up. Even just a few days ago, even though I don't go traveling, not this year anyway, next year, but this year, hardly any travel to go anywhere, but still there's so many talks on Zoom and Skype and goodness knows what else. So I gave a talk to the London Buddhist Society just a few days ago on Zoom, and it was all about opening the lotus. That was the title of the talk. And of course, many of you who've been on my retreats should understand what that talk means. That simile of the lotus. A lotus closed at night. But when the sun comes up and warms the outermost petals of the lotus, when the light hits those outermost petals, the lotus opens. And the outermost sheath of the lotus opens first. And if ever you go and watch, see a lotus pond, and if you ever see a closed lotus and look on the outside of that closed lotus, it's not got no color on it, hardly any shade to it, and it's rough. A lot of time it's like serrated, like, you know, like corrugated iron, sort of. And it's got no fragrance. But when that outermost petal opens up, it reveals the next layer of petals, which are still quite thick, but at least they got some color, and at least they got a tiny bit of fragrance. But it allows the warmth and the light of the sun to hit that petal of the lotus, and that opens up, allowing the next layer of petals to receive the warmth and light of the sun. And one layer after another opens up automatically because of the warmth and light of the sun. And in that simile, you are that lotus. Sometimes you're all closed up, no fragrance, no sort of beauty, just like a closed up piece of corrugated iron. But inside, you know, there's this incredible beauty and fragrance and profundity. All we need to do is open up that lotus, and the warmth and the light of the sun stands for the warmth, kindness, the light, mindfulness. Those two qualities just shining on you, opening you up. So we start with the warmth and light of you on your body. And it relaxes, becomes really at ease and delightful. And then you go inside to your mind. And I always start the simplest part of the mind you could possibly conceive of. How peaceful are you? How irritated, agitated are you? Be mindful of that most important part. And then, what makes you more peaceful? What creates peace in your life? Especially when you're sitting down in a meditation hall like this. What makes your mind more peaceful? What makes it disturbed? I'm not talking about outside, I'm talking about inside. Because even if somebody comes in late and bangs the door, I've often noticed this when people on retreats and they say, can you please tell people in my cottage to please close the door quietly? And I asked them, I said, when did they last bang the door? I was this morning. And that door is still sounding inside of you, even though it was this morning. You see, the main noise which disturbs us is not the noise of the traffic or the banging door. It's the memory of it and the thinking about it. That's the loudest noise. Someone bangs the door, bang, and it's gone within a second. Who are they? Which one was it? I'm going to tell Ajahn Brahm about them. I'm going to make sure they're banned. They need to be taught a lesson. I'm going to sort of, and you can see that that's the greatest noise. So little by little, we learn what creates disturbance to our mind and what relaxes and creates peace in our mind. When we know those two things, it's just, it's kindness and awareness, and you find your mind starts to get very peaceful. And often I have to mention this, that when you start opening that lotus, sometimes people get tired. They get a little bit dull and sleepy, which is par for the course. The reason, unless you've been doing a lot of meditation, the reason it's par for the course is because your brain is taking the opportunity to just to take a bit of a break. It's low energy. And so when the brain is low energy, you feel a bit dull, what do you do? Please don't fight. Because if you fight, you know, once, I was giving you many of the little tricks we used to do when I was a young monk in Thailand. One of the things, we'd get a needle, we'd put it between our fingers. So if you started getting sleepy, ow, it would prick you. But of course it never worked, because after a while just automatically you dropped it and just had a nice sleep. That never worked at all. Until, this is my own experience, it's just after a while, you just let yourself be sleepy. And then you're kind to the sleepiness. You don't interfere with it, it's part of nature. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not against the precepts. 5 precepts, 8 precepts, there's no precept there at all which says, thou shalt not be sleepy. But if you're in a car driving me somewhere, please, that's a precept, please don't be sleepy. If you're driving me in a car somewhere. But anyway, that when you are meditating, if that sleepiness happens, just leave it alone. And because you're leaving it alone, you're not fighting it, you're not having any negativity towards it, I don't want to feel this way, it's there. You have a little bit of awareness of it, just leave it alone. And you'll find that your awareness starts to increase. Slowly, but it does increase. And just by relaxing as much kindness and awareness as you can, that sleepiness starts to disappear all by itself. And that's the most efficient way. After a while you realize why that's the most efficient way to overcome the dullness of the mind when you're meditating. It is because when you're fighting the mind, trying to control it, you're wasting energy. When you just notice it with kindness, you're actually not wasting any energy at all. And the mind's got its own source of energy, it starts building up energy. It starts recharging. Until after a little while, you are recharged. You can try and fight it if you wish, but if you do, you get tense. That's, I remember that so well as a young monk, that I'd either be sleepy or be restless, thinking too much or hardly aware at all. And I could never find that middle point. It was like having a pendulum, it's either this side or this side. I couldn't find that wonderful middle. So I was sleepy, I'd really put forth effort. And then you become restless. Restless, calm down, and then go sleepy. So instead, I let sleepiness be. Nice and peaceful. And you notice your head was down. And then it would rise up all by itself. And the back would become strong, and you have energy. Beautiful, peaceful energy, not restful, restless energy. When you don't have that restless energy, peaceful energy, wow, it's so easy to meditate. When the mind is energized, clear, and not thinking too much. Because what you're doing, you're noticing, it's like you're listening to the world rather than thinking about it. sometimes that's what happens when you're giving a lecture or teaching somebody something. I'm saying something, but inside people's heads there's another conversation going on. So whatever's said by the teacher doesn't go in. And this is the teacher here. It's not the monk or the nun. The teacher here is life. Your experience of meditation, what's that teaching you? We have to be very quiet and listening to this experience called life. To really be here in silence and learn. And then you start to experience some amazing stuff. The mind sort of brightens up, becomes awake. And just like I always mention, when you do your body sort of relaxation, the body feels so comfortable. It is delightful. When the mind starts to become peaceful, that is also delightful. It's fun to meditate. I think I said this last night in the talk I gave here, that it's so delightful that you just want to meditate. It's not saying, oh, crikey, I haven't meditated today, I better do my hour. You get up in the morning, oh, just I'm supposed to meditate, I'm a monk. Oh, in the evening, I better not go to bed yet, I'm supposed to be a monk, so I meditate. You don't do it because you're supposed to, or there's some rules about it. You do it because you love it. You like to meditate. It's enjoyable. Because you've developed the perception of the delight in peace. What a beautiful thing that is. Many, many, many people, they have delight in so many things. What are you doing for Christmas, New Year? I say, I'm just meditating. Oh, go to Margaret River, go to the north, go somewhere, go and do something. Nah, prefer the silence of the mind. So joyful and delightful, you can't get enough of it. And of course, that's only scratching the surface. As you go deeper in the middle, as your lotus opens up, wow, you wouldn't believe what's in the middle of that lotus. Just how beautiful the flowers are. How refined and joyful. You're going inside to the nature of your mind. And it's incredibly, incredibly beautiful. All of your minds are. When you're free, the body disappears. The mind becomes peaceful and still. And joyful and happy. The inner bliss states. Never be afraid of those. It might feel weird, but don't have to worry. It's only weird because you've never been there before. It's a wonderful place. The first time you came to this place, this temple or monastery down at Serpentine, you didn't know who was who, where things were. But after a while, many of you have been here so many times, it's like a home. You know this place, you feel safe. So you can come and hang out. That's like in deep meditation. You know it so well. It's a wonderful place to hang out in peace and stillness, relaxing to the max. Okay, so that's a little introduction. I don't know if it made any sense, but one of the reasons I do that introduction is to get people to come in and calm people down, relaxing their body and mind. So when you start meditation, you've already done quite a bit of calm. So now if you'd like to sit down on your stools, on your cushions, on whatever you have. And here we go to a nice, peaceful meditation. I got into the habit over the last few years of just doing guided beginning of meditation. Is that okay for everybody? Is it too much words or too little words? Yeah, it's okay. Some says okay, but anyway. So anyway, let's see what happens. So usually I try and do about 20 minutes of guidance to get people in, and the last 40 minutes of like up to you. Sorry?
Last 20 minutes.
Can't we do it longer? No, okay. Okay, the last 20 minutes of just silence to let you enjoy the peace. So here we go. So sitting down, that's better. Closing the eyes and just feeling the body in this moment. It's saying to your body, how are you, body?
How are you doing? No matter what type of meditation, I'd always start with the body awareness. Because I know if I don't relax the body at the beginning of meditation, it will just get stiff and achy towards the end. If I relax at the beginning, it never gets sort of painful or achy. Aware of your legs. It's like you're just focusing in on that part of the body. When you take photographs, you know, you zoom in and focus in on a part of the scenery. Now you're just focusing in on your own legs, how they feel right now. And if you want to adjust your posture, move your legs. If you're sitting on a chair, just separate the knees or bring them together or put the feet forward or tuck them more under the chair. Get your legs as comfortable as possible. Pamper them at the beginning. Care for them. Once your legs are comfortable, you can move your attention up to your butt. I'm sitting on a cushion. I've got to make sure that that cushion is centered. Feels okay, so I can move up from my legs to my torso. I usually start with legs and butt because basically there's not too much problems down there. When you get to your body, you know, people with back pain, injuries, indigestion, all sorts of other, you know, tumors, cancers, all sorts of other stuff which goes on in that main part of the body. So I want to make sure that I've got enough mindfulness and kindness already developed, so it's strong enough to relax my torso. I just can feel my back and just, it does need to be straightened up a bit until it feels the best for you. And any organs inside the body, if there's any, the best word I can find is just imbalance in that part of the body. And just focus on it and give it kindness. Because kindness takes away any tension made of fear or other causes of inflammation. When that part of the body relaxes from your own kindness, you find that it becomes more at ease. You feel more peaceful. It's a start of healing. I've got great confidence that your body has so many ways of healing itself. Only we don't let it happen. We tense up. So now I'm just going up and down my torso. My digestive system's fine. Tummy's nice. Heart and lungs are just at ease. My back is a nice posture, feels good. And I get up to my shoulders. And learn how to relax them too. Sometimes I do visualizations. Imagine the muscles in my shoulders like a lot of strings being pulled apart, stretched on both sides of the spine. And I imagine letting go of that stretching, not pulling anything, letting everything just relax and be loose. And along with that imagination, I can feel the muscles start to loosen off. So they're not tight, they're not tense. and release the pulling apart of those muscles. And it feels wonderful. Always notice the delight when the body relaxes, and it gives me the simple reward to learn how to relax part of the body. And go down my arms and elbows. And if you have any problems in places like your elbows, just pause there for a while. Give lots of kindness. The door of my heart is open to your elbows. I care for you. I can feel even my elbows, which are usually very wonderful and ease, even they relax a bit more. And go to your hands, wrists, checking out everything is in a really good position. And you go back up to your shoulders and your neck, making sure the head is not too far forward or not too far back, not leaning to the left or the right. It's nicely balanced. So even the neck feels comfortable. If ever you do have a little cough or irritation in the throat, could be caused by hay fever or so many things, just be kind. A lot of time you find that compassion, that gentleness, relaxes the inner part of your neck, the throat, and it's comfortable. And lastly, to go to your face. Instead of looking at a mirror, we are aware of any tightness around our eyes and our mouth. How those muscles feel right now. And of course, extending from the eyes above on the forehead. And after a little bit of trial and error, you can learn how to relax those muscles. Until the facial muscles are open and free. I've gone through quite quickly. Do it slow if you wish. But now your whole body is at ease. And you're aware of your whole body. When I'm aware of my whole body, there's something I've left out, I will just attend to that, be kind to it, and adjust it to make it so it's really almost perfect. And then so I start to watch my whole body, at peace, relaxed. It hasn't come up yet, but it's going to come soon. Here it comes. Beautiful, delightful feeling. My body is at ease. It feels good. It's a pleasant feeling to have a body that's relaxed. And I stay with that pleasant feeling. I get to know that feeling so well. Because I know this happens with my mind as well. When the mind relaxes and feels at ease, it too has this pleasure. The pleasure of peace, of comfort. You also find the pleasure of a relaxed body takes the relaxation deeper. And then after a while, it happens naturally, it's like the lotus opens up. And you become more aware of your inner world. And just got into the habit of just checking my piezometer. mind, how peaceful are you? What makes you more peaceful? What disturbs the peace? As always, same answers, you all know, the thoughts of the future, memories of the past, oh, they just disturb my mind. Outside of meditation, I have to attend to them, maybe. But during the meditation, this is a time-free zone. The past, spend too much time there. I'm going to learn from the present, not learn from the past. What's it like just to be now? And the future, my old saying that now is where my future is being made. Looking after the present is one of the best ways of looking after my future. And silence. I'm listening to this moment, not talking back at her. Now, just to add something new for today. Now, use your imagination if you wish to. Imagine you're not in Nolamara. Imagine some beautiful retreat center. Even better, imagine you're just in this park next to a river. You're sitting on a comfortable grass cushion under a beautiful cool tree. And use those powers of imagination, of role play. Just to imagine for a moment that park is now called Bodh Gaya. The river was the River Nirantara. And you're sitting in the spot where the Buddha became enlightened. You're sitting there as if you were enlightened. Sitting there with nothing to do in the whole world. Nothing to achieve. Nothing left to perform. And everything that could be done. You're enlightened. At peace, deeply contented. And all you can feel is the sound of the birds and the soft wind blowing. And nothing is missing in your life. Just imagine that. Nothing needed to be done. Just sitting, enjoying this moment. The future is for solving problems. All your problems are solved. The past is where you learnt. All your learning is finished. You're free. Free to enjoy the peace of now. Nothing missing in your life. Just a peace with the present. Just enjoying and experiencing the incredible silence. Just being. Nowhere to go. Nothing to plan, nothing to gain or lose. All the causes which might bother you have disappeared. All there is can ever be is deep state of peace. Enjoying this moment. There's nothing you can do. This is perfect. And you cannot improve upon this. How does that feel? For those who get into this, call it Buddha Anusati. You get deeply into it. You do get that taste of freedom. You don't want to think. Nothing worth thinking about. You just enjoy the peace. The realization there's nothing missing. And from there, just let the mind stay. And let the peace build. Let the energy grow. And the delight in a peaceful mind, take you further into meditation. Don't you drive the bus of meditation. Just sit in the seat and let it carry you. When I start speaking again, you'll be close to the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How is it inside of you? How deep inside your lotus are you? How does kindness work in awareness? People often ask, how do you meditate? So simple. Be kind, be aware, nothing more. Can you appreciate the delight of meditation? How joyful it is. Special flavor of joy. Which is very satisfying. As we start to come out from our meditation, from our mind, we come to our body. We've been sitting peacefully here for 40, 45 minutes. How did your body feel? I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times, as usual. Please wait for the 3rd ringing of the gong to fade away before you open your eyes to end this meditation. Oh, it's amazing. Thank you. Oh, good, you're answering the questions. Okay, no trouble. Here we go. Okay, as usual, when we do meditation, that it's amazing. I sort of remembered when I closed my eyes, there wasn't so many people here. Imagine people, and some people moved. Wow, amazing. Anyway, usually we have this live streamed, so we get many questions from overseas. We have 4 questions over here, but first of all, are there any questions from our audience here? Because sometimes you always miss out. Yeah, you do, yes. Can you go to one of the microphones? It makes it easier. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have a technical question related to meditation. I'm trying to understand the development of ego and the hip 5 heaps. And I'm just wondering, what is beneath the 1st heap?
The body. Yeah. The development of the ego, the 2 main parts of the sense of ego and self are the will and also the consciousness. Sometimes people still feel that their body is who they are, this physical body. So those are people who are quite afraid of actually death. But you know, one of the things which happens in meditation is actually not uncommon that people can remember some of their previous existences. And they check them out, they're real. It shows you this body is not the only body you've had. that you know, you've lived before. And that just takes away the any idea that this body is, you know, your permanent essence, yourself. But underneath this body is just is our will, our wanting, our inclinations, what you want to be, where you want to explore, what you want to do in your next life, or even in this life. And those inclinations, trying to find some fun, some games with the body. When you meditate, you find there's much more fun that goes on with the mind inside. But to overcome that understanding of the will, I think many of you should have known me by a long time now, that when I teach meditation, we don't use the will. We use kindness. Kindness is the opposite of the will. Instead of trying to make things this way or that way, we are just kind to whatever happens. Give beautiful mindfulness and compassion. Then all these wonderful states of meditation, they happen by themselves, which is wonderful. All the things which you really struggle for, you strive for, you really want, you know, you really put a lot of effort in to try and get these states, and they never get them. But then one day you just let go and be kind, and they just happen by themselves. And it's amazing. There's so many stories about that. The one which comes to mind, these little anecdotes which you've collected over years of meditating. There's the story of the little monk, a novice monk in Thailand when Ajahn Chah was still alive. And when Ajahn Chah gave talks, sometimes they'd go on for hours, sometimes all night. And you'd have to sit there, you couldn't go. That's maybe okay for me, you know, because I was a young man. But sometimes I had these little novices there, maybe 12, 13 years of age. This little novice there was sitting there and he was starting to think, when is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When's he going to stop? And that became like a repeated message he was saying to himself, when's he going to stop? When's he going to stop? And then this little novice apparently just turned that question around. Just a moment of like insight. And he said, when am I going to stop? And this little 12-year-old stopped. When he opened his eyes, all the monks had left. It was early in the morning. He just had a few hours of incredibly blissful meditation. So deep, so joyful. He stopped. He stopped his mind doing things and trying to control things. He stopped his will for a few hours. Most blissful experience. So there's experiences like that which you have, which actually, you know, you experience when you stop willing. And it shows you just this will, which many people develop as, you know, the sense of who they are. It's actually a great load of suffering. And if you can somehow calm down that will, even a small amount in your meditation, you're just sitting, you're not doing anything. You're not wanting anything to be anything different. You're not exercising that will, you're calming it down, softening it. And you experience the result of that, peace and delight. And everything tends to be fine. And of course, the last part of the sense of self is, you know, your consciousness. Which consciousness is it you think you are? And little by little, that consciousness gets very refined and starts to disappear. That's why meditation gets very scary for some people. Because what you're calming down is you. Little by little, you vanish. And little by little, this is not some intellectual exercise, I'm going to do this because I want to become enlightened. It's just an emotional path, which happens because the beauty and the joy and the truth takes you in. You vanish, you disappear. Oh, what joy not to be. So this is little by little just how this meditation actually just, you start to understand these really incredible teachings, who you are and who you're not. I don't know if that did answer your question or I went too far. Okay, you're nodding your head, so okay. So anyway, let's get a couple of questions from overseas. From Jay Moriarty. Ajahn Brahm, I feel like I'm way behind in life compared to other people my age, and I'm not living up to my potential. Any advice? Whoever told you what your potential was? We have some ideas of what our potential is, but then, of course, that's just a lot of proliferation. So it's wonderful, Jay, just your potential is just who you are right now. You're here, you've arrived. And it's wonderful when you are at peace with yourself, even just for a few moments, make peace with where you've got to in life. You have a human birth, which is supposed to be incredible. And you're here, make peace with this moment. And there you find, you recognize that you know, your potential has been reached. And it's more than wonderfully enough. Other people, they sometimes ask, well, what do you want to be? Do you want to be President of the United States? Do you want to be rich, powerful? What do you want to be? We always sometimes judge ourselves by what others say. But how do you feel? Your most peaceful, wonderful times of your life. The times you've been just so joyful, nothing's been missing. Just for a few moments even. Those moments of what you might call spiritual awakening. Sitting by a beach, you don't want to be anywhere else in the whole world right now. Moments of peace and contentment, which everybody has. Now that's your potential. To experience such states. Everything else is just extra, not so important. Many people told me that when I became a monk. I had a very good degree from Cambridge in theoretical physics. I could have been anything. I could have been a great scientist. And some of my friends and relations said, you're wasted, what a great education you've got. And you're going off to Thailand to become a monk and sit under trees? What are you doing that for? The best decision of my life. Or one of the best decisions. It's a beautiful thing to do. So you find out what's really worthy and valuable in life. And what's valuable in life is not the what other people say about you. It's a peace in your own heart. That's your real potential, your real wealth. To have the peace and joy and contentment inside. That's the potential to live up to. You can touch that and you know what human potential is. The next question is really right up my street. I don't know who said this, but anyway. Dear Ajahn Brahm, what to do with unrequited love? That's what it says here. I'm from Ukraine. Thank you in advance for your answer. Now, sometimes unrequited love, you're so lucky to have your love unrequited. So don't love another person. See if you can love peace. See if you can love truth. Love stillness. So your happiness, your love, doesn't depend upon uncertain people. Because all other human beings, they are uncertain. Sometimes, you know, the other person loves you back and you get married and have a relationship. But sometimes, what's that like, having a relationship? So many relationships don't work out. But the relationship you have, first of all, with your body, your own body, to be kind to it, to care for it, to get to know it, to really love your own body in the sense of knowing how to live in harmony with it and at peace with it. What a wonderful thing that is. And then with your mind, how to love your mind, be kind to it. Because sometimes, you know, this is one of those teachings I often give on retreats. Some people, I don't feel like meditating today. I say, great, don't meditate, go to bed and just go and have a cup of tea and just have a walk or whatever. Because you love your body, you love your mind enough. Sometimes the mind says, I don't feel like meditating today. It's like I don't think it's my mind, I just care for it, it's a friend, an associate. I do that with my mind. I say, you don't feel like meditating today? Fine, great. What do you want to do? Oh, I want to go walk. I want to read a book. Okay, let's read a book. And then after about half an hour, my mind said, actually, you know, I really want to meditate. I said, okay, I'll meditate with you. And so I never force my mind. I found out how it feels, what it wants, and I care for it. I love my mind. because you love it, it cooperates. It's wonderful having something you so important, your body and your mind, who cooperates with you. And I never tell it what to do. I say, oh, come, let's have some peace, relax. Yeah, okay. And that way we have a wonderful time together. And so I don't have unrequited love to my body and mind. You're at peace with it. Other people's bodies are mind, oh, you don't know what's going on there. So you can't control that. It's hard enough to control your own body and mind, but to control other people, just let it go. Be a nice single woman who has so much beauty and happiness inside of you, and so much peace. And people say, how can you be so wonderful and peaceful and happy? And you know why. From Robin, Ajahn Pong, welcome one to relieve one's own remorse, guilt and shame, especially when there's no one to support or try to understand. Your remorse, guilt and shame. You've probably done some terrible things in your life, but you've also done some terribly good things in your life as well. So it's a very simple thing to do if you haven't heard us before, is get the sheet of paper and then write a vertical line down the middle. And on the left-hand side of that piece of paper, all the things which you deserve to feel remorse and shame and guilt about, all the terrible things you've done. I do remember doing this with one of the prisoners I used to go and visit. And I gave him that piece of paper. He filled out that left side so quickly. He said, the right-hand side now, write something good you've done. He looked at me and said, I've done nothing good. It was really a case. And he must have done something nice. No, nothing. I'm a terrible person. I'm awful. Hey, come on. Said the other prisoner said that he was looking after one of the prison cats. So you look after prison cats? Yeah, I know. But did you give me some milk this morning? I said, yeah, I did. Okay, put that down. Gave the cat a saucer of milk. And he put that down. And that was just the crack in the damn wall. And then once he put that down, he said, what else have you done good? Oh, yeah, I did something else good. And he filled out that right-hand side of the piece of paper so quickly. And then I gave it to him and said, look, you know, you're not such a bad person. You're a good person who's done bad things. It doesn't make you a bad person. See the bigger picture. Very kind, caring, beautiful person who's done some bad things, and that's all you ever see. The two bad bricks in the wall. And of course, if you haven't heard this, add to that anecdote. There was one of the prisoners in one of the prisons, I won't say where, and you know, he heard that story of the two bad bricks in the wall. It doesn't mean you have to destroy the world, it doesn't mean it's a bad wall. And his prisoner was going around and telling some of the other monks who used to go and visit him, so you know, it was only two murders. I only murdered two people. It's only two bad bricks in the wall. And I think, yes, you've got it. Just because you murdered two people doesn't make you a murderer. What else was he doing the rest of his life? And he said, from there you get a totally different perspective, maybe a weird perspective, but it's a different perspective and it's one which heals and one which you can relate to. You did a bad thing. But what else have you done in your life? So get that piece of paper out and write down all those incredible, wonderful, beautiful, tremendous things you've done. Write them down. And then, of course, once you've filled the right-hand side of the piece of paper, the next thing you do is get the scissors, cut it down the middle. On the left-hand side, in the rubbish bin, where it belongs. Rubbish deserves to go to rubbish. And all those wonderful things you've done, photocopy it. Many times, laminate it. Put it all around the house, in your bedroom, kitchen, dining room. So it always reminds you you're not a bad person. And it's wonderful when people have that great insight. Hey, I'm not a bad person. It's only two murders. What about all the other wonderful things you've done? Which means I don't have to murder anymore. Lice from Toronto. What should I do if I lost my temper with a co-worker but feel justified? Is it okay to sometimes show anger? Actually, usually I would say no. The reason I say no is because then your co-worker, that's all they see. They see their anger. They don't see why you were angry at them. And it's much better to find other skillful means of showing your co-worker that they're doing something wrong. And you try and find a time, take him aside, and take him aside when they are in an open mind. So usually what we do, I got this actually from someone else when I went to one of these conferences and was sitting in hearing somebody else present. And I sort of heard this and adapted it. It's called the sandwich method. So if you've got a co-worker who's not doing the job properly or is coming late or is not performing, what do? You don't get angry at them. You take them aside, you praise them, first of all. You're such a wonderful worker. You're so good at this and good at that. And really happy to have you as a co-worker. And because when you get praised, actually you start listening. So it's like it opens the eyes and opens the channels in the brain, which are actually listening to what you're saying when you praise somebody. And when you praise them enough, that's the piece of bread. And then you've got the filling inside, the cheese or whatever you have in there in your sandwich. And then you hit them. But you are really lazy, you're just really don't respect me, and just you make too many mistakes. And then you put the filling, because then they're listening to that. And then you finish off, but we really respect you, we like you in this company, we really want you to do much better. So because I like you being here, so thank you so much for being part of our group. You put the bread on the bottom. So they start with praise. When they're ready for it, then you hit them, metaphorically. And then you finish off with a big heap of praise on the bottom. Which what that means is the first bit of praise opens up their mind, so they're hearing things. Otherwise, you just shout at someone straight away. How do you feel when people shouted at you? When you really tried your best? What? They don't really appreciate me. I'm really trying my hard. They don't know what I'm going through. My kid's in trouble. My wife or my husband is not sort of doing the right thing. And they don't realize what I'm going through. Because a lot of times people don't perform because of external situations, or they just haven't had the training. They're in the wrong job, or they need an extra bit of time. But when you're kind to them, you listen, then they may be able to let you know they trust you. And they value your contribution. Have you ever gone to work and you think, all the work I do, and this is what I get from the boss, the co-worker? And it's unfair, and it feels unfair. So you're not really listening to what they're saying. But you give the praise, you're really acknowledging and appreciating them. And then you can actually say just what the fault is, and they listen to it. And afterwards, they say, but look, we still want you to work here. We all have our faults, but maybe a course we can suggest forget it much better with your typing or whatever it is. Or is anything else? Is there problems at home or something? And that kindness in the end, the kindness at the beginning, and then pointing out the problem in the middle. So that's where people listen to what you're saying, and they take it on board, and they want to somehow find solutions to the problem. But getting angry, I must admit, I can't see that working. All you see is the anger, and you don't respect the person who actually got angry at you. So don't lose your temper. Keep your kindness. You'll be much more powerful. Okie dokie. Any comments or questions on that?
Ajahn Brahm, when we meditate, and we feel blissful inside, can we use this energy to radiate, to close people, friends who are in need, okay?
Of course.
And
you can
the person receive it,
Yes, they do receive it. So it's true, especially if they're very close to you. Oh, I think I mentioned this to the monks, that story when he used to do retreats, and at the end of the retreat, do the metta meditation after a 9-day retreat, and get people really sort of lots and lots of metta. End of the retreat, be meditating for a long time, and they get strong minds. And then I say to them, okay, now imagine or think about somebody, someone close to you, not in this room, but someone close somewhere. And just zap them with loving kindness. Just spread it all over the body, inside, outside, everywhere. Give them lots and lots of kindness. And I go into great more detail than that. And then I open my eyes and look at the clock. And if I don't, you know, if I have a piece of paper, I write it down. And at the end of the retreat, I said, you zap that person at 4:23 or something. I said, now tonight or tomorrow morning, give them a call. And just have a friendly chat, how are you doing? I said, oh, by the way, just what were you doing this afternoon about 4:23? And it's amazing, just, I don't do that anymore, because what happened was all these people would call me that evening and say, it worked. Yeah, of course it does. But it was important for them to prove that it does work. Because they said, you know, they rang up their sort of sister or brother or something on the other side of the world. So that's funny, I was thinking about you that time. And you do connect, pretty simply, if you really want to. And it's wonderful to see you can do that. Which means that they may be in another part of the world, but you can send lots and lots of kindness and love. And of course they receive it. Sometimes they don't realize what's happening, but it doesn't matter. You just get in there and just zap them. Okay, it does work, yeah. Okie dokie, so there we are. Any more questions from our wonderful audience here? Okay, great, so let's... Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now I can bow three times and then we can have the next series of questions in front of you. Just a bow. No more.
Good.
On meditation. Very good.
Magic.
Never had that question before on unrequited love.
Great answer.